The debate about climate change has partially been focused on its economic consequences. But what about national security? That's the topic of a panel discussion today at ASU. Retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant General Norman Seip will be there. He's also on the line with KJZZ's Jorge Valencia. He asked him about how extreme weather events like hurricanes or fires can compromise our national security.
Well, we're seeing an increase in the number of natural disasters, humanitarian assistance missions that we have to perform. Obviously, that comes with a cost in the way of resources and dollars. Those resources and dollars, although very important to take care of our American citizens and people around the world, but that money and those resources could also go to other training events that we need to take care of across the board as a military. We even see our own natural disasters, humanitarian assistance events, say in the great state of Arizona, in the way of wildfires, that obviously impact us on our training ranges, cause us to mobilize the military, both the Guard, Reserve, and active duty to respond to our state's needs as well as our citizens' needs. So there's a cost for doing business as climate change brings more frequent, longer duration, and sometimes more impactful type of events to us.
What about climate change affecting countries that are of strategic concern for us, for the U.S.? How does that pose a danger for the U.S.?
Well, we'll see. We've seen both from our leadership in the Department of Defense as well as the intelligence community that the impact of climate change can be looked at as a threat multiplier. It can even be looked at as an accelerant. You know, although a climate event may not cause conflict to occur, it can certainly accelerate it, and it can certainly add to the complexity of it. I'll give you an example. If you take Syria and go back a couple decades when they had a long-term drought, it pushed many farmers and their families off their farms into the cities. Those cities were not prepared for that influx of population. As a result, lots of unemployment, a youthful population, a place that insurgents and violent extremist organizations like to work out of and like to pick their members from, and hence potentially an accelerant to the events that we see going on in Syria now.
That's really interesting. I mean, you're drawing a line between a weather incident and the creation of these groups that fight against the U.S. Can you think of another example?
Well, I would tell you one that we look at, and not necessarily the climate change, but the Marines from Yuma, not necessarily from Yuma, but the Marines are a great example. Over in Afghanistan, they stood up three forward operating locations and basically operated completely off the grid, so to speak, in that they cut down the number of fuel convoys that had to go out there and service those FOLs by using renewables and by using biomass fuels. As a result of that, by not having to put as many convoys out, that saves lives, that saved resources. It also allowed us then to divert airborne and soldiers, Marines, and sailors to other more important missions out there. So you can see that choices help us mitigate and possibly minimize the impact of climate change, and it certainly helps us mitigate the fact that we are tied to a single source of energy, that being fossil fuels.
Given that you're now retired from the Air Force, you are a retired Lieutenant General, I'm guessing you might have some recommendations for climate policy.
Well, I think my recommendation for climate policy is let's at least come to the table and have a discussion. You know, I've heard now, climate change now worded in the words of the effects of a changing climate. I'm all for whatever you want to use in the way of the verbiage if it means that people will uncross their arms and actually come to the table and have a discussion. And I would submit to you that not only does the military at the installations in Arizona have 24/7, 365-day ops that can't afford to be taken down by the grid, but I would submit to you that there's many businesses out there, and I think all the homeowners would like to have energy assurance when it comes to being able to flip the switch, turn the power on, turn the cooling on, and get what they need there. So to me, that's somewhat important as far as let's talk about how we build resiliency into our homes, into our businesses, into our military. How do we bring choices? Choices at the pump, choices for what we use in the way of cooling and heating, and then how do we cut back on our use of fossil fuels? I mean, I get it that right now 90% of our transportation needs are met by fossil fuels, but if we wait until we're 100% sure that humans are causing climate change or that climate change is really occurring we will be late to need, and we will struggle as far as trying to bend that curve into something more reasonable.
How long have you been thinking about this?
Yeah, I would submit to you, when I was a captain, I wasn't too worried about energy security. I just wanted to make sure that my F-4 way back when had gas in it, and I could, you know, turn that gas into noise and power. But as I got more and more into command positions, particularly as I spent a year in Iraq, sending out my own airmen to be on those convoys and sending out my own airplanes to include myself to protect those convoys, I really saw the link to energy security and national security. And I submit to you, you can take that link and even expand it, that the economy, the environment, energy security, national security are all linked. And the discussions and the decisions that we make in any one of those four or groupings of those four, we need to think through the impacts they'll have on those other areas.
Well, Norman Seip is a retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant General, and he'll be part of a panel discussion at ASU on Thursday about the connections between climate change and national security. Thank you so much, Lieutenant General.
Thank you, Jorge, and thanks for everything that NPR does across the country.